Hello, folks, and welcome to the Metallica Report. I'm Stefan Shirazi, editor of the band So What magazine.
And I'm Renee Richardson, director of philanthropy for Metallica's foundation, All Within My Hands. This is your official weekly Metallica podcast, the only inside source, bringing you all the news from the band's HQ and studios deep in the heart of Northern California. Man, it is hard to believe we're less than a month from M72 2024 kickoff in Munich. Everybody's getting fired up, but that's not what we're talking about today. Because if I may say so, we nailed the Spotify question this week and you guys totally delivered. I'm really excited to jump in. The question we asked was, excluding band assistant, what would your dream road crew job be with Metallica? And Bruno Gonzalez says, I would like to be the photographer's assistant.
Yep, that's some hard work you're signing up for there, Bruno. But, it's probably good 4 or 5 miles a night because they do some serious walking. And plus, you'll be carrying the extra weight of lenses. Yep.
And then there's Omar Kakuma. He says, prop man or whatever.
Yeah, well, that would be really good, I think, for the movie set that we had all those years ago. That's probably would have been the prop man. You would have been straight in there. But it's always good to have your name on the list if more props are coming up.
And Jason, who is being pretty funny by saying Lars is guitar tech. That's what he wants to do. Ha 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 ha. He says, I'm only joking, though. I would like to be the band's chef.
No. Don't joke. Sign up, get hired as Lars's guitar tech and be the band's chef. And then you get a double salary for one job because obviously Lars doesn't play guitar.
And another one for you, Bobby Anad would like to be Kirk's guitar tech. Now, this one makes sense because he would like to tune and string Greeny.
Oh, that's big there. You're going in big, Bobby. Good for you. I trust you.
And John Mellentine would like to be the beach ball inflator guy. It's an important gig. I love that idea.
Yeah, I like it. And I also liked what you said off air, which was how about a beach ball deflator guy? Because there's so many of you out there who just seem to not know what to do with the beach balls. So.
It's hilarious. Six people will sit on that thing to get it squished. Anyway, one more for us. Ryan says, quote, whatever requires me to travel everywhere they go and get to take in the shows. I think he's gunning for your job, Steph.
I'm not sure he's gunning for mine. It might be more gunning for the irreplaceable person we're about to speak about for the next 20 minutes, right?
You know what? Nailed it. Yeah. Steph spent time sitting down with one of Metallica's longest serving crew members. His primary role is the equipment manager and bass guitar tech, but the reality is he is all-knowing. And Steph, I've actually heard you refer to him as the Swiss Army knife of Metallica's tour and studio operations, which is such a fitting description of the man that we're talking about, and that is Zach Harmon. So let's all take a trip back to HQ with you and find out how Zach got into this gig, what this gig entails, some memories, some really good stories, and I'll tell you, I believe we're all going to learn a little something right now. Let's get into it. Here's Steph kicking things off.
Look, you won't like this, but you are somewhat of a legend around these parts in terms of, you know, if there's a piece of gear and we're sitting here at HQ, if there's a piece of gear in HQ, if there's a piece of gear in storage, if there's a piece of gear in a sea container going across the ocean as we speak, you know about it. Like, you know where all the leads are, you know where all the amps are. I mean, this is a vast basis of knowledge that you've accumulated. And so just, if you would talk a little bit about your role as it pertains to today.
Right. I think that even from the early days and then kind of up till now, not something you plan, is just like being a quartermaster, being the person that's like, well, do you have the case? Do you have what goes in the case? Do you have the amp and the speaker cabinet, but do you have the cable? Do you have the right power supply? You have a guitar, but do you have string? Did you bring tape? Did you bring batteries? When we get there, how are we getting from here over to here? So there's a lot of those maybe forward thinking things. So it's like, well, okay, you're the guy that's going to buy things. So once I'm the guy purchasing, then now I'm buying everything, putting it together. Maybe it's not my stuff. It might be another crew person stuff, but at least I'm getting it for him. And so almost everything in the studio, warehouse, everything on tour, if it's not mine, at least it's something I was involved in or I'm aware of or could answer a question. production manager says, we need to air freight gear, and we're thinking about 2 airplanes, and I'll say, no, it's 4 airplanes. So I'll have to sit there and show them how I count out the air freight and what goes. And so I can answer the small questions, but I can also answer the big questions, or big enough that then they can go to freight people and production and management and get real money quotas. So I get involved in the big stuff and then in obviously small stuff.
Let's go back to the beginning of how that started. I mean, you know, we were just talking a little while ago about those very early days of long blonde hair, black leather, Armored Saint, hanging out as a fan.
I only hung out with Dave Pritchard with Armored Saint. I don't think they were a band yet. They definitely were not a band yet. I was friends with Dave Pritchard in South Pasadena. Cool guy, lived in a cool house. He had the new amp and the new guitar. He was an awesome player. So we just hang out with him, meet girls. He just set up a jam at somebody's house and we would just be hanging out. And he'd come over to my house, and my mom was a singer and a piano player in a church choir. So she'd play on the piano and Dave would play guitar.
Wow.
I know. And so imagine your parents, you know, disapproving of your friends with the long hair and everything. And you're kind of going, oh, we like Dave. He's a good guy. We like him. So, you know, because he's talented, right?
Mom Harmon was riffing with Dave Pritchard from Armored Saint, right, back in the day.
Yeah, you know, and I remember there was a little, I remember I like that Stairway to Heaven song. You know, I like the beginning, but later in the song, I don't like that part of the song. You know, when it gets heavy, you know that part, right? So in the piano, though, they liked all that part. And so did Phil and Gonzo kind of spearheaded, you know, the band, and got John, and they got Dave Pritchard. And so then I became friends with them through that. There was a different bass player then, and they started doing shows, and I just wanted to hang out, be friends. And I had a Jeep Wagoneer, so we could put gear in it and haul it around. And I remember hanging out with those guys that they just, yeah, there's that bass player, Joey Vera. Oh yeah, he was in a different band. Oh yeah. So we'd go and we'd watch him play with another band. They go, wow, look at that guy. He can play. He kind of, he plays with his finger. He didn't play like Cliff, but it kind of more like he was one of those guys that was a real bass player, you know, and you kind of like, that's a Cliff was a real bass player.
He was on that side of the bass.
Yeah,
fence.
You could look at Joey and you could tell that he had a thing about him. So then it was like, okay, we're going to go on tour. And Armored Saint got signed. They got Q Prime Management before Metallica. And they got Chrysalis Records. So then it was just like, all of a sudden, they're like, the management came in and said, we're going to pay you. So I'm like, oh, awesome. You're going to pay me. So it was like $150 for like a week. And then there was a thing. I didn't understand what it is. There's a thing called a per diem. I didn't know what per diem meant. But the per diem was just as much money as they're paying me. So I was getting double money. I'm going like, this is awesome. Wait, what?
I've made it.
Yeah, exactly. So then it was like, wait, what am I going to do? What's my job? Because I just hang out and kind of move stuff around. Hey, well, you're going to do the drums. Okay. So I just sit there with Gonzo. Gonzo was awesome. He was just, you know, well, listen, when I do this, you do this. And listen, I like this cymbal like this. And okay, and this here. And you got to make sure this is tight. And if I look at you, give me the drum key. And so Gonzo was very good with me trying to show me what to do. So.
Yeah, but what I've got to interject here with as well is, and this is really important for people to know, is that, you know, you've just talked about the per diem, and you just talked about the wages and, wow, I'm here and I'm doing it. But you work fucking hard. Like, you're a seeker.
We were young. We were humping.
Not everyone has the work ethic. You wanted to learn about stuff, right? It wasn't just enough for you to do the job and get the per diem and the paycheck. You wanted to learn, right? You were always looking to see how things were done.
Well, right? They're kind of... It took a step up because they realized that nobody could get a truck. So I had an idea where I put $300 in Bank of America. I got a credit card. So all of a sudden, since I had a credit card, that got management's attention that there was now a person with a credit card. And I would have to get reimbursed with cash later. And then when Armored Saint, besides doing sporadic tour dates on the West Coast, Arizona, and when we met and hung out with Metallica guys, when we actually went on our own tour, they were like, hey, listen, all you crew guys, they let everybody go because you were a friend and you were a friend and you were a brother and you were a cousin. And they're all, because we're all friends. So they let everybody go and they kept me. So I was the only one that they kept with Armored Saint.
And so you're ascending very quickly in a position of trust as well. And then there is a moment where, you know, Armored Saint and Metallica are together, back together after what happened in 1986 with Metallica and with Cliff. And so the two bands are back together and you find yourself kind of segueing across camps, right? Because obviously, you know, this is no different to scouting. If you're a sports team, I'm sure someone's looked across and seen, well, that guy never stops. Like, we want to get him into our camp, right? Did it feel like that?
When we did the Wasp Metallica Armored Saint tour, I have to say that was great education for anybody growing up, learning anything, because people weren't nice to you. People were hard on you. I show up, we agree to something, but when you get there, it's not what we talked about. So that's when you learn.
You're talking about promoters, right? And
I had to deal with promoters. I had to deal with a Metallica tour manager, a Wasp tour manager, and I'm with Armored Saint. We are so low on the totem pole that no one cares what happens to you, but you need to work with people. You need to be nice to people or they're not going to get anywhere. So our Metallica crew in general were always like good with me. So I trying to, you know, come on, you're playing on the East Coast in a club somewhere and you're the opening band for two other bigger bands. You know, it's like, well, what do you mean we don't get food or we don't get whiskey or we don't get towels or we don't, wait, what do you mean we have to load our truck in the snow, but you get to back up, you know, that kind of stuff. You just going, hey man, you just gotta pay your dues. You know, you gotta pay your dues. And you learn to do a little bit of everything. You can't just say, I just do this or I just do that. You got to make it work. So that tour was life-changing experience because we're big, but we're not big. You know, it's a great bill. We're playing like, you know, ballrooms now, you know, not just clubs. So that was like, for me, I think I came out of that like understanding much more. Then at some point later in 85, after that, Metallica played Day on the Green, Oakland. And that was like, well, where's the crew? Well, there is no crew. Oh, no. Peter Mensch calls my house, talks to my dad. So, and the two of them, I didn't get along on whatever they discussed. It did not go over very well because my dad was a real hard ass, you know, and Peter's Peter, right? So whatever they were discussing, and I'm like, well, he says he's manager for Metallica and you need to call him. Okay, so what's going on here? So I kind of get a hold of everybody and they're like, hey, listen, our crew is in Europe, or their equipment's in Europe, or they're not gonna bring the crew out. So we want you to help us with the one Oakland show. So it was just John Marshall and I. There was no crew. And so while I had been acquainted with the Metallica band members, I can't say I really knew them that well. Then I'm like, now I'm at James and Lars's house. So I go over to the house and I'm like, hey, we're here, you know, and kind of hanging out. And it's like, okay, well, we're going to rehearse. So there's the garage down the driveway. So we're going to go in the garage. And so I would go in there and, okay, they're going to rehearse. And
this is in Carlson.
And yes. Yeah. So I'm like, so Lars is showing me the drum kit. He's telling me, okay, listen. And he was real specific with me about certain things on the kit. And when I turn around, I need this and watch the pedals. So I was trying to focus on him. And it was pretty new for me. But I was also into guitars, but I think I was supposed to be more paying it, worrying more about Lars. And so I'm thinking, well, where's the other gear and everything? So James and Lars just start playing. And I said, hey, so when do the other guys get here? They go, well, they're not coming. So I'm like, and James isn't singing. So he's not singing. So if you don't have vocals in a song, because why would you sing? Because James already knows the song. So I just remember the two of them playing the songs, but I was losing my way because without the vocals, maybe I didn't know the songs well enough. I needed to hear the vocals. But I remember the two of them playing so loud in a little teeny garage, going crazy, and Kirk and Cliff were not there.
That's crazy.
Right? So we're kind of like, I was a little nervous, obviously, right? But it was all fine. It was all good. Evening ended up fine. And next day, I meet up with John Marshall, and we got the truck, and we're loading in, and I'm trying to help him. You know, we had set up speaker cabinets three high and set up Cliff's gear and this and that. And there's a drum, big, giant drum riser. And I was pretty nervous, and I'm on the drum kit, and I'm thinking, okay, yeah. And I felt pretty comfortable around a drum kit, and I'm like, and there's monitors. I'd never felt monitors that big behind me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I was like, and I remember I was so nervous, and I was looking in that at one point I looked over the drums, and whoa, there's people.
There's a lot.
It's a stadium.
People.
There's people. I was like,
Oakland Coliseum people.
And I'm checking, and you can hear it. I was going, whoa.
You're like,
that was a big deal. That was a big deal.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It would have been a big deal as well for them because, I mean, just again, to reframe what Zach's just been talking about is this is all happening in a tiny garage in the Carson Boulevard house, which is obviously a part of Metallica folklore and history. And, you know, this Day on the Green show that you're talking about, looking over the drum kit and peeking, that's like 60,000 people for this band. That was a huge date in America, huge date. But they've seen
it's like
you,
three.
They've seen you survive like the kind of the weirdness, like they've seen you deal with everything.
Oh, it was. I mean, we're playing in the middle of the day, like in the afternoon. We're like an opening band and the crowd was going crazy. And I remember, you know, those other crew guys with the other band, they were like so old, you know, like like maybe 30, you know, they're so old, you know. I remember that they would, I remember
30.
They'd kind of make fun, you know, like, oh, who is this band? Who is this guy? Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that.
These 30-year-old men.
Yeah, look at that guy. Oh, look at the, hey, listen to the triplets on the bass. Listen to the drummer. Wow, listen, look how fast he's playing. You know, this and that, you know, and it was the whole, like, and the crowd just going crazy. So you knew when you were young, you could tell that, man, I felt like all those people were old. And I was young.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. First charge. Jason is your first assignment, right? Am I right in saying that?
Right, doing different jobs on and off with the band or one-offs or being opening band. But yeah, I worked with Jason and it's like, I really appreciate Jason. You know, he came to my wedding. He would always look after me. He was the nicest guy. But at the same time, he was like so particular about the instruments. Me being with Jason made me understand, like, wow, you know, this is a guitar. There are things you really need to pay attention to. So I think with Jason, it helped open my eyes to pedals. In which order do you put the pedals? And do you have good cabling? And when you put this and this together, and well, why don't we have one amp do this and a different amp do that? And Jason really experimented with different bass guitar companies. And so Jason was really sharp equipment-wise. So, you know, I had to keep up with Jason.
But again, and I think this is such a key thread through this entire conversation is, you had to keep up with Jason, but that's because you have a self-imposed work ethic. You're not just going to show up and do the job. You want to do it to the very best of your abilities. If there's something to learn, you want to learn it. It's not like, oh, God, I have to learn this. It's like you want to learn it because you want to try and be a step ahead. So, again, it feels like it's another perfect marriage because Jason is that guy too, right? He was that guy. And so are you. And so this is perfect, right? You can learn. You're learning from him, right?
Yes. Jason was in the band a long time, like all the biggest records, you know?
Yeah. You had a lot of adventures, which, of course, that's for a whole other conversation.
Yeah, a whole other conversation.
But I mean,
everybody kind of asked me about, since I knew all the bass players, you know, of course the band members do, but from a crew perspective, they're all similar in the fact that they're all likable. The crew loved them. They were down to earth. They're definitely grounded people and they're all excellent. They're all like, you know, everybody gets opinionated and I'm like, no, they're different. So you can't say this guy's better than this other, because everybody's going to.
Absolutely.
You know,
I think that's a great point. And they're all very individual. And you know, you, again, in a conversation we were having earlier, you made it pretty clear that, or you made a point that became pretty clear that, you know, the bass player in Metallica is like always a pioneering position and never conventional. It's never a conventional bass player. It's always someone bringing something different, some flavors, which brings us to Rob and your relationship with Rob, which I think obviously it's probably as deep as any of them, maybe the deepest.
Everything I've learned, anything I've picked up, I'm like, are you kidding? Robert's reaping the benefits of everything I know, what I've been through in the past, and I got Metallica machine behind me, so he gets whatever he wants. There's no excuse, you know, and Robert's very simple. Robert doesn't need a lot. So people give me a hard time saying that I spoiled Robert, and Robert has more gear and more stuff and more sounds than anybody. But it's like, You know, we take our recording studio's style and technique of multiple amps, multiple sounds, multiple pedals, things that you do in the studio. You don't get to have all these choices when you go on tour. So kind of what I wanted to do was, well, wait a second. You spent all this time getting James a great sound, or a bass a great sound, or Kirk. It's like, why can't we just do a mini version of what we used in the recording studio and take that on the road? So that's kind of in the late 80s and early 90s where you kind of got into the complicated amp racks, where you got to use multiple amps and speaker cabinets and all these crazy configurations. And so that's kind of after Cliff, Jason started getting the benefits of that type of thinking, and Robert now has got all kinds of bass sounds, you know. So now we're,
and it,
things have progressed.
You must have picked some stuff up from Robert too.
Oh, Robert is so prepared. He knows the song before he even walks in the room. He's already been practicing it for a week before he even shows up. So Robert knows the song better than anyone. He's very specific. He's very prepared. I don't think Robert isn't real into exactly maybe what I'm doing. He's just hoping I get a good sound. Robert is a player. He is a player and he is performer. He knows what he needs to be doing with James and Lars. So he is focused on that. So I'm a little bit more focused on his sounds and things like that, or being there for him.
This is a 6 cent question that I'm not expecting it to be accurate. I just, your first reaction. When I ask you for one or two of your most memorable, and they can be positive memories or just like, holy shit, this fucking happened memories on the road, closing in on 35 years of this band, probably longer actually.
Yeah, I got a lot of top tens.
Do you want to pick a couple?
Throw a couple out. I have a lot of top tens. Well, probably going to Russia for the first time definitely takes the cake.
And give us the date of it.
Yeah, it would be during the Black Album. I think it's 92, AC/DC's headlining band.
Oh, 91, the airfield.
Yeah, I think it was.
Toshio.
It was a 91, 92, 93, but maybe it was, I don't know if it was 91 or 92. But that's, flying to Russia. And, well, before Russia, I'm in Barcelona, Spain with our production manager and our crew. And, the giant Russian Antonov plane where the front of the plane, the entire nose pivots up.
Yes.
And you can drive trucks into the airplane.
Yes.
We spent 22 hours loading one plane.
What?
Like forklifting gear, driving a forklift into the plane and loading gear. But I mean, we're loading it 20 feet high. So we're just loading, like, it's not just like loading a truck. It's like, is this safe? You know? And so you have, it's in Spain, but we have a Russian crew, you know, and they all got like the suspenders on, you know? So you know who they are. And I remember our drum tech's Fleming's toolbox is at the top. And there's a forklift and there's a guy, and that toolbox fell from the top to the bottom.
Oh.
It split open. It definitely didn't, you know, we had to strap it together. So it wasn't fixable, right? But whatever, fast forward 24 hours or whatever, we load that and then we fly into Russia. We fly into Russia and we go to the Kremlin, and you're looking around and we're at the hotel. The hotel's right next to the Kremlin. It's got 6,000 rooms and there's no phone. We got no phone, no pager. And you arrive and like, there's no one there to meet us. There's no one telling us what to do. There's no production. I don't know. There's no one not to do. And so you go to your room and you go in your room and you're like, wow, a cot, not a bed, a cot, a cockroach, shower. You're just like, whoa, this room is Spartan. This is crazy.
Spartan. That's not a very good use of the word, I think.
I'm kind of just, what do I do now? So I sat in the room for a couple minutes. I'm like, maybe I should look around. And I open the door, and there's a woman just staring at me.
What?
Like maid service, or just a woman that works, just staring. Oh, hey, close the door. And then I realized that the doors don't lock, right? So I'm like going through, I sat in the room and I laid down and I'm like, I can't sleep. And I'm like,
I can't get out of my room because there's some woman standing in front of me.
When do we go to work? How do we get to the gig? I don't know what to do. So after a few hours, I just packed up my stuff and I went in front of the hotel for 6 hours. And I waited till a van pulled up and I found someone that spoke English. So I'm like, hey, I'm with Metallica crew. Where are you going? We're going to the venue. Hey, can I ride with you? Yeah, sure. So I never went back to the hotel for that week. I never did.
You stayed at the site for the whole week?
I slept in a big long lighting case, had foam in it. So I slept in the lid of the case, right? And I hung out with the Russian army, had their tents out back. So I'd hang out with the Russian army guys, you know, so I traded my Metallica t-shirt for a hat and a wool jacket, you know, and stuff. God. Yeah. So I was just kind of hanging out with them and
just hanging out with the Russian army for a week in basically a trailer.
You know, there's delay towers for the audio delay tower. It's like a Time Warner show. You know, it's a gift to the Russian people for the wall coming down to the free world. We're putting on a Metallica AC/DC. We're opening, you know, AC/DC is the biggest ever then. So we're doing a concert. You could stand there. I could not see when people ended. You couldn't see when it ended. I mean, far as you could, it's because it's an airfield. Yeah. We played an airfield. Yeah. So we did there. We're there for a few days. I remember somebody had this big giant contraption with a satellite dish. It was a satellite phone. It's like I'd never seen one.
Yeah.
A satellite phone with a big dish.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well.
We're there for a few days. And then when it comes time to load out, to disperse the crowd, like if you want to get rid of people, make it rain, and then it disperses them, right? So they somehow managed to make it rain, disperse the crowd. So I just sat there loading out in the rain, like all night. I mean like real rain, nonstop. So I remember just falling asleep upright in the rain, hanging on to scaffolding on the stage, working with Jake Berry, or our production with Jake Berry was our AC/DC production manager back then. So it was like Jake and I loading out the gear all night long. And so finally, next day or so, I get to go home. And
you get to leave your trailer.
I got up to customs and I'm going through and I'm like all of a sudden start panicking because I have a Russian uniform in my bag.
Oh boy. That's right, because you exchanged it. Yeah.
Wait, at this point, I'm not a tourist anymore. I am scared. I got to get out of this country. So I threw away the jacket, but I still got the hat. I still got the hat at home. My kids wear it.
And would you have got searched?
I you know what? At that point in time, I needed to get
But looking back, could you have got away with the jacket?
You know what? It's hit and miss. It's hit and miss. I mean, we go to Russian jail? Because I mean, I got a military uniform.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you going to explain that one? Like nowadays, you could.
Well, maybe
but not then.
Well, I would say in general,
yeah.
I think you probably took the safe path. Well,
yeah, I have a lot of what if stories. You know what I mean? So like, hey.
Oh my God, that was so great. It was so great to hear Zach talk about all the things. I have to share my Zach Harmon story really quickly with you guys. I met Zach for all of maybe 2 minutes in person before COVID hit and we were all quarantined. And then in August of 2021, I needed a Metallica backdrop for a shoot we were doing with Carhartt for the Metallica Scholars program that we fund through the foundation. So I shot him an email just asking for a backdrop and I got a barrage of photos with detailed location description of every option available to me. I was like, oh my God, this is a treasure trove of information of what I could possibly get into. He also included an alternate option of who to go to if I had to have one made, as well as the estimated cost and the contact info of that person, expected time it would take. I mean, it was freaking one-stop shopping. And I was like, dude, I don't even deserve this. It was fantastic.
Look, I think Zach Harmon is the one American above all others that I trust to make the perfect cup of tea. because even if he didn't know how to make it, he would study it. He would make sure it was the best cup of tea for you. He would know how you like your tea. He'd know how much milk you want in it. No, and I say that with an enormous amount of love and compliment for someone that I've known for decades and who is tireless and thorough in his work, and also very discreet. And that's one of the things, that's probably the main thing that makes this chat all the greater for me personally, is, you know, Zach steadfastly avoids interview requests. I mean, I've been asking him to do So What stuff for decades. I mean, you know, but he keeps his cards and his counsel inside his chest, not even close. You know, it's inside. He really doesn't want to break ranks in any way. So this really was a privilege, and it's been a privilege to listen to it. And by the way, I remember the young blonde-haired dude he spoke of at the top of the show. So cool, and really, really grateful for him taking the time to sit down with us.
Yeah, he's an OG for sure, and we have completely eaten up our allotted internet time, so that, I'm afraid, is all we have. But we'll see you next week. Until then,
see ya. The Metallica Report is produced by Metallica HQ, Pantheon Media, and PopCult.
If you like what we're doing here, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to visit Metallica.com/podcast to submit your questions, offer your thoughts, and become a part of this podcast.
Copyright 2023, all rights reserved.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.